Freshmen coming to the University of Oregon are a bit more accomplished over time, coming in with higher GPAs and test scores. And it's not by accident. It's because the U of O is seeking out students who have burned just a little brighter than students in the past. The search for top scholars offers potential benefits for both student and university. Jim Rollins is the Director of Admissions at the University of Oregon and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange today. Jim, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So is this a slow, steady rise in GPA and the other numbers like test scores among the freshmen, or has it been a bit steeper than that?
I'd call it a slow rise. It's hard to say where it would switch from slow to steep, but I would certainly call this a gradual thing that we're still very happy to see going the direction that it is.
Do you have some numbers, some averages about what the student GPAs are like coming in, what their SAT scores are like coming in now?
Well, the average GPA this year did just barely cross the 3.6 line. And depending on what your listeners are used to in their past, they may have thought of our GPAs as being very clearly always on a 4.0 scale. But it is also important to note that more and more we have students that are not only taking more and more things like AP classes and International Baccalaureate Program classes, but some of their schools do give them actually more than a 4.0 for taking these extremely rigorous classes. So in all fairness, and also to give people context, as our GPA rises, we're also having more and more students that actually have above a 4.0, which 20 or 30 years ago just wouldn't have been happening. And so in the long haul, we do see some of these things happening gradually, but we're very much, again, happy with the fact that as we do some purposeful things, we're seeing things rise a little faster than they might have otherwise.
That particular concept you're talking about there might be a little difficult for people who always thought about it being a four-point scale to mm-hmm. grasp. So the idea is that you actually can, I mean, what's the highest you've seen that you can think about, Jim?
Well, the real answer to this gets crazier and crazier, so maybe I'll spare you what you're really asking me. But within the context of people weighting their classes, the more traditional thing to do over these last few decades around the country is to give an extra point of rigor, they'll call it, for AP and IB classes. And so that if a student, in theory, took all AP classes all 4 years of high school and they always got A's, they'd have a 5.0 instead of a 4.0. Now, there aren't that many AP classes to take, mm-hmm. And so what's much more common is that students who've done really well and had a few of these classes in there, they might be over a 4.0 by a little bit, so maybe a 4.1 or a 4.2. And unfortunately, this does become one of those unintended consequence moments. As high schools do this, there comes this competition where a high school hears, well, I'm getting a lot of complaints from my parents because we don't do this enough, and maybe we need to do more of this, and pretty quickly, you start to see, at least in certain parts of the country and in certain parts of states, you'll see them start to give equal weighting, that extra 1 point. And by the way, along with an A being a 5 point instead of a 4 point, a C might be a 3 point instead of a 2 point, for
really?
Example.
Yeah.
So a student, even if they didn't get an A, might have a benefit from this. But some of these high schools will start to give all of their classes that they internally designate as honors a weighted designation as well. And that's where this starts to get even crazier.
So even though they're not true advanced placement or AP classes,
no,
they get credit like they are.
They're not. But there's only so much we can do to mess with those GPAs when they come in. We've only got so much time when we've got over 20,000 applicants. And we have to make some fairly quick decisions, at least initially, off of these grades before we take that closer look for things like scholarship consideration.
Okay, I'll hold that number there, 20,000 applicants, because I have a question later on about
sure.
Who gets to process this stuff. But I want to talk first, though, about Scholars Recognition Day a few weeks back. Tell us about that event.
Well, that's a great program that we've been putting on for a few years now, and I believe a story involving one of my staff, David Vanderhagen, who ran that program, mm-hmm. is what caught your attention to talk with us today. David and all the folks that help us with that, faculty and staff around the campus, have been putting on this program, and if you like it, over the last few years. And this January program is one particularly designed to recognize some of our initial top scholars, if you will, who've been offered admission already at a fairly early date, and bring them to campus and give them a chance to not only interact with our faculty who they might encounter if they come here, but also to interact with each other, because that's a big part of how they select their college.
And so how long have you had such a day like this?
I believe this program as it currently exists, you could probably say has been going for, I'm not exactly sure, but probably about 5 or 6 years. We play with what time of year it is, and we do some other programs for top scholars, both on and off campus throughout the year. We even had one down in Ashland this fall. But this particular program has been going for several years now. Like I said, I think about five or six.
Is there a fairly intense competition to be in it? I mean, this is by invitation only, isn't it?
It is, and it definitely represents kind of the upper tier of our freshman applicants for the year. We usually use pretty much grades and test scores to do that, although we're very clear in any way I can talk with you about this morning that grades and scores aren't the only way to identify these students. It is the quickest way. So you could think of most of these students as having probably around a 3.7 or better, maybe even a little higher. A lot of them are much higher than that, actually. And then test scores tending to be around 1,200 and above on critical reading and math.
Jim Rollins is the Director of Admissions at the University of Oregon and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about efforts to boost the accomplishments of the incoming freshman class at the U of O. Join us on the Exchange if you have some interest in the subject matter and would like to talk to us about it. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. So what are some of the perks then available should students decide among this group of top scholars, as we'll call them, that they do want to attend the U of O? What are some of the perks they might be able to get for choosing U of O as their place to go to college?
Well, the caliber of students we're inviting to these programs typically have grades and test scores such that they're getting at least the smaller of our two main academic scholarships. So scholarships, we use that term to refer to money that is based on your academic abilities, not on your financial family need. And if they're an Oregon resident, that smallest award, we call it the Apex Award, is worth $2,000 a year. For all 4 years they're in school towards their tuition costs. And if they're at the higher level of that, which is called the Summit Award, they're getting $4,000 a year. An out-of-state student with that same criteria getting the Apex or Summit Awards would be getting either $5,000 or $8,000 a year. And we're very much focused on making sure that this perk is something that we're not just giving them to the first year to get them to come. We really only have an interest in offering scholarships that the student can keep all 4 years, as long as they maintain a certain GPA once they get here, of course.
And how high is that GPA?
Oh, to keep the scholarship?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Typically, although I know we always have to tweak these, we're looking for a student to simply maintain a 3.0 or better. And the vast majority of these students have to do that. But again, we do want them to be doing something, in a sense, to earn keeping that award.
But you said you also don't want them to, it sounds like you don't want them to just come in for 1 year and then leave. So how do you make sure that they are going to stay there long enough to make sure that the scholarship pays back to the university?
Oh, absolutely. Well, certainly one of the things I'm invoking here is the idea that even though there aren't many out there, there are colleges out there who will give one-year scholarships to students that can't be renewed. And so it's meant to be a get them in the door kind of program, and then all of a sudden you have to pay that much more per year after you arrive. So our focus is on making sure that we fund our scholarships and we plan them out in a way that if we're going to give it to a student, it's with the assumption that that amount of money is going to be there for them each and every year they're in school with us, instead of it vanishing away and they suddenly have to come up with that funding.
Jim Rollins, is it a fairly even split then in pursuing in-state versus out-of-state students at the University of Oregon?
I don't know how we'd measure that for percentages there, but we are about half Oregon residents right now. We'd be thrilled for that to be a little higher, but one of the functional things about living in Oregon here is that we have a fairly small state in terms of the number of high school graduates. So if you just look on either side of us, for example, we have, in rough terms, about 30,000 high school graduates a year here in Oregon. Washington to the north of us has a little over 60, and California has somewhere in the neighborhood most years of 350 to 380,000 students graduating. So if we look at how many we have on our campus, we have to also think about that math when we think about who we're serving and who we're focusing on. So we definitely focus on making sure we have space for Oregonians first and foremost. We are a public institution, despite what the declining state funding would tell you. And then we turn around and we certainly do make room for those out-of-state and out-of-country students, of whom we have a great mix.
I'm glad you made that reference because I was toying with it myself, making the repetition that the University of Oregon is, of course, a state school, but, of course, much less so over time because of the state support. That is a valid point to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
Let us take a call. We have Bill in Medford, if I can get the button pushed. Bill in Medford, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jim Rollins, the Director of Admissions at the University of Oregon.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I just was going to make a comment. You were talking as if the extra points for AP classes was something new in Medford around 1960-61. That also gave extra grade points for like a 5 point for an A for an AP class. So that's, you know, goes back quite a ways, at least in Medford.
Okay, I didn't realize it had been quite that long. All right, thanks for that, Bill. Appreciate that.
That's about the longest back I've ever heard of a weighted environment. We do know it's been going on for a while, but that's a great one for me to remember. And, again, it's been in the last 20 or so years that we've seen really an explosion of that kind of thing.
So when you say an extra point, you mean, you know, 4.1, for example, if you're running with a solid 4, if you take that advanced placement class, right? It's the 0.1, not a whole point?
No, it is a point. Right. So if a student takes an AP class and gets an A in those schools, they get a 5.0 in that
five.
Class.
Okay.
There are schools that are much more sparing with that. There's some that really do limit it to a tenth of a point or a half of a point. Some of the more extreme cases in the other ways, as we've seen some of the schools in the Chicago area and in Texas and some of these other places, do some 5, 6, and even 7 point grading scales. The most extreme case I know of being a few high schools around Chicago where they have 5 different levels of grading available for 5 different kinds of classes on their campus, everything from AP Physics and Calculus BC down to the 9th grade PE class. But on the other hand, I have seen high schools in the country who actually listed and weighted grades for a class called Honors Physical Education before.
Honors Physical Education.
Yeah. I've learned over the years in admissions never to use the phrase I've seen it all, because just when I say that, I see something like that.
So, Jim, how do you handle it then? Because, I mean, if you see somebody come out of the big GPA, you think, well, this is University of Oregon material here. But then do you have to then put it into this matrix of how to reconfigure an Illinois GPA?
We really do. And, again, there's some things we just simply don't have the time for at the volume we deal with. But there's also a lot of value we gain by looking at the big picture on some of these things. I mean, on the simplest level, we certainly don't look at a student with a 3.66 GPA and think they're better than a student with a 3.64 automatically. In fact, sometimes that student with a GPA 2 or 3 tenths of a point lower may turn out to be the stronger student overall once we look at these kind of details. And some decisions that we make pretty quickly in terms of offering the student admission, but something like a scholarship that we're considering them for, we're going to get much more in-depth. We're going to, either if it's a high school we know a lot about already, especially in-state schools, that tends to be the case, we're going to draw on the information we have. And if it's an out-of-state school, we typically, and at least in areas we go to a lot, we have counselors, admissions counselors assigned to those areas whose job it is to get to know those schools best and to understand some things about, well, not just how does this school do weighting, but how hard are they about grading in general. There are some schools that still really toe a line as to not only not weighting grades, but making it still pretty difficult to getting an A, and they'll stand by that pretty proudly. And it's kind of a gamble they take with their students applying to colleges, unless those colleges know about their school. But then that's part of what the high schools do with us.
Well, here again, then, as you point out.
We look really closely.
Yeah, it's not just the numbers at all. We were talking to Jim Rollins, the Director of Admissions at the University of Oregon, about attracting a slightly higher wattage freshman class. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Carter in Wolf Creek.
You know, this conversation here is making me quite on edge and nervous as an educator myself.
Why?
And it is because of such poetry as T.S. Eliot wrote in The Rock of where is the wisdom that's lost in knowledge and knowledge lost in information and so forth. And also the Finnish education system doesn't work the way that we're listening to now on your program. And there's a book called The Case Against Competition by Alfie Cohen. There's a lot of material that says that indicates how toxic a grading system can be. And I commend to people who want to go in the direction of the whole person not to emphasize grades, but to look at such materials as The Ecology of Mind, or Steps to an Ecology of Mind is the correct title, by Gregory Bateson, so that we don't end up with people who want to self-destruct because they've been so involved in a competitive system. And the question I have here is, how much corporate money is involved in these scholarships that your guest has referred to?
All right, that's a fair question. Let's take it from there. Thanks for that, Carter. Appreciate it. Which brings up the question I just written down. What is the source of funding for the Apex and Summit scholarships, Jim?
Well, I can't tell you all of that. That's kind of at a level above me. I'm not at that table when these are decided. But I can tell you in general, my understanding is that we largely grow that scholarship funding out of our own revenue within the institution. And it is part of what we have to look at when we charge students admission. We have to not only look at how much we can fund some of those students by giving them what you could think of as a discount off of their tuition. And we actually put a lot more of that money per year into need-based aid than we do into these scholarships. As much as we're glad to have increased this pot of money that we've been given the availability to use, it is very much from within the institution. It's not corporately sponsored. It's not a top scholars day brought to you by Company X kind of environment
right.
at all.
Okay.
But it is something that we do to try as much as we can to live within our means. I mean, it's a big university with a big budget. And a lot of that money swirls around in ways that I can't really speak to every dollar that goes everywhere, certainly. But I can tell you that our approach to these scholarships is an internal one. And we are very much trying to kind of come back to what I think the caller was talking about a little bit. We'd love to be able to reward things besides things that are grades and test score driven, but the bottom line is they are one of our best ways to do that up front. And on a big scale.
They are a measurement. They are a quick fix on the situation before you drill further.
But you can, you know, everybody can write down that an admissions director is saying, we know good and well that they are not perfect measures at all. And we will never think of them that way, and we never want to talk with families in a way that suggests that.
Let's take another call. We have Connie and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jim Rollins, the Director of Admissions at the University of Oregon.
Hi. Thanks for the program. This strikes very close to my heart. When you said that you were guaranteeing that the student would have the scholarship all the way through the academic cycle. I really appreciate that because I know I went to a small college and we were not guaranteed. We were told we had a scholarship or several scholarships possibly that would last for the duration. And yet, several of us at our senior year when we could transfer nowhere else got our scholarship money completely cut. Mm-hmm. And so that, I know for a lot of us, we just vowed at that point that we'd never support the college as alumni, and I never have. And I know that when they call, I remind the student usually calling saying, this is what happened to me, watch out. So I think that students and their parents should be really aware that this can happen at a college if you don't have some kind of guarantee.
All right.
So thank you for doing that at U of O.
You bet. And I do want to assure you and other listeners, Connie, that this is something that the idea of giving it for 4 years is something that most colleges, I think I could say, do. But it is one of the reasons I bring it up. It is one of those very fundamental kind of buyer beware kind of moments that we do like for families to be aware of. And it's just one of those simple things that even the colleges that do approach that one-year award, they are going to be transparent about it, but sometimes you do need to look a little more closely or ask the right question to make sure you understand.
Jim Rollins, I haven't asked the why yet. You know, I remember reading a University of Another State catalog several years ago, and it said, you know, our goal is to educate everybody who can come through the door. And so if you're shooting for a higher caliber of freshmen, what's the general goal here?
Well, the main thing I'd say is it's not the only kind of student we're shooting for. We certainly see our duty and our mission and our opportunity, that of serving a lot of different students who come to the university ready in a lot of different ways. And we don't want to bring them in if they're not ready. And as we look at students whose grades and scores are lower, the further down that kind of yardstick we go, the more we have to be careful about looking at the other indicators that that student, whatever they've done so far, has the right potential to be successful with us. If anything, we don't want to set them up for failure beyond our means to support them. But with these higher caliber academic students that we're talking about, we absolutely do want to go out there and do well with them. And one of the things that my counterparts in other states around the country have been noticing, especially over the last few years, is that we do have an increased competition for these students. And we do have to work harder to get that student with the 3.98 and the nearly perfect ACT score. We do have to work harder to get them because so many other colleges are after them. And so that's what this kind of effort we're doing right now and how we measure our success in it is about, is that for that segment of students we're trying to serve better and to attract at higher rates. We do certain things. We don't want to just attract them by saying, here's some money, but we want to help them understand that the University of Oregon is one of the only 60 members of the American Association of Universities in the U.S., is a great place for them to not only want to be seen, but to be a part of things and to really be engaged. And we can't do that by just showing them a scholarship check. We need to help them understand what it would be like to join the honors program, to participate in research, to do all those things that you can do in such a great way here. And so our idea of going after this part of the larger group of students we're trying to attract becomes much more focused in this way.
So now with the numbers again, you said 20,000 applicants. Applications closed, what, 2 weeks ago? And how many actually will get those slots out of the 20,000?
Well, one of the most important pieces of math for people to understand is that every college, and I mean every college from Southern Oregon to Harvard, offers admission to more students than we can take because most of our students out there do apply several places and give themselves choices. So with that said, we're looking to have a freshman class of about 4,000 here again. But we will offer admission to a great deal more students to get that. We really almost manage three different pools in this regard, where if I offer admission to an in-state student in Oregon, they're going to take our offer and pick us about half the time. If they're from out of state, they're going to pick our offer about one out of five times, and international students will pick our offer about one out of four to one out of three times. So that kind of math is behind me telling you we'll offer admission probably to about 14,000 of these students.
Wow. Okay. So a lot of thinning out of the herd along the way, both done by self and done by the university as well.
It does. And as much as we want to be their favorite choice, we ultimately want them to make a great one for them.
All right. We've learned a lot about the whole admissions process. This is about the University of Oregon amping up the freshman class over time. Jim Rollins is the Director of Admissions at the University of Oregon. Jim, thanks so much for talking to us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you, Jeff, and go Ducks.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
We'll take a short break and come back with the Writer's Almanac, followed by a discussion of fatal car crashes in Oregon and how that number is down sharply. That's all coming up on the Jefferson Exchange. First, the break.